Hello, my beautiful beanies, and welcome to The Bean, the weekend edition. First with yesterday's news, I and Glenn ZB. It's the weekend edition. That means you will get Saturday as well, which is just as well, because that's when Jack Tame was talking about the election. That's when Tony Veitch talked to Jimmy Spittle. Yesterday, Andrew Dickens caught up with a couple of guys from The Play That Goes Wrong. And back on Saturday, Jack spoke with Kevin Bridges, who's a comedian. But before any of that, we need to talk to an All Black, don't we? Here's Sam Whitelock.
When I say 57-0, what goes through your mind, Sam? I mean, this is South Africa, your great rival.
Yeah, don't believe it at all. I remember locking up partway through the game and going, shivers, we've got a pretty good lead here. But knowing that the team they are, there was always that possibility of them coming back and taking some of the opportunities that were given to them.
Sam, the thing about this, having a long chat with Wayne Smith, and what a career he's had, but Wayne Smith was saying that post the Lions series, there was a rethink from the All Black coaches. They wanted to give you guys almost like a more, I guess, open game plan. So a lot of information has gone your way. Therefore, over the last few weeks where we've had this sort of angst around some of the performances, did it feel like with that information coming through last night, it sort of came together?
Yeah, it's one of those things as players, no matter what team you play for, everyone's always had that natural instinct to attack, especially as Kiwis, whether you're playing international rugby or rugby on the back lawn. And I think when we back that instinct, we go good. And probably in the past, we've kind of questioned it at times. Where last night, the first try, I think what Aaron Smith did, had a quick tap,
Yeah. Saw
the space and just trusted himself to do it. So I think that was a big difference to where we've been in the past.
Yeah, of course, the result was slightly surprising, but in some ways not. There's always one game, isn't there, every season, where everything just clicks and the All Blacks look like they're from outer space. They look like they're in a completely different league to everybody else. They're barely human anymore. They've evolved. And and it's taken a little while in the season for that game to come. Unfortunately, the South Africans are on the end of it. Isn't there there's one game like that every season usually, isn't there? Anyway, it's not very scientific explanation, but it's fun to watch. Let's talk about the election, because the campaign's still happening. We've still got a week to go.
But there have been so many fascinating elements in this campaign, and there are going to be so many fascinating elements to watch once the results start trickling through next Saturday evening. Fascinating beyond just the Labour versus National race. Will Winston Peters be king or queen maker? Will the Greens make 5%? Will the Greens beat Winston? Will the Opportunities Party defy the polls and creep over 5? Who will win the likes of the Ohariu and Hutt South electorates? I'm going to be working on election night. The last 3 election night headquarters where I have been stationed are as follows. Okay, get this and see if you can detect a theme. Hillary Clinton. The election night I did before that was Mitt Romney. The election night I did before that was Winston Peters in 2011. That, of course, was the year that New Zealand First were voted out of Parliament. So it's fair to say that between Clinton, Romney and Peters, I don't have a great track record with being with election night winners. This year, and read into it what you will, I've been stationed with the Greens. Hey, I don't know. Maybe trends are there to be broken. I don't want to read into it anything, but you might.
When I was driving to work this morning, I noticed that the Sky Tower at Sky City is all lit up green. Have the Greens paid for that? What's going on there? I don't understand what's happening. Because it's not St. Patrick's Day. That's March. Anyway. I've already voted, so I have no more interest now in this election campaign. It's all done as far as I'm concerned. I'll tell you what I am interested in is The Play That Goes Wrong. We'll talk to a couple of guys from that shortly. Unfortunately, something else I'm not really interested in, America's Cup Sailing. Here's Jimmy Spittle.
So Bob Fisher, as you know, leading journalist for yachts and yachting. Doesn't that sound nice? He says he's received an email from Sir Russell Coutts confirming no Larry Ellison, no Oracle for the next America's Cup. Is that fact or fiction?
Well, look, I think until you hear it from Larry himself or an official reply from Larry himself, then You know, I think that's probably fact then. And I think like a lot of people that have either been in previous America's Cup games or potential owners or founders of teams that are thinking about coming back into the game, you can't really make any official statement until you know where the goalposts are. You know, we've obviously heard, you know, Patrizio Bertelli come out and say, well, it's going to be a monohull. But until you really see that in writing and ultimately until everyone gets to read and see the protocol, I think it's probably unlikely that you would get too many official responses from anyone interested about the game who have been, you know, have a history in it or a new team.
See, this is from Coots, and I quote here, my understanding, this is an email that he sent Bob Fisher, which he was happy for Bob to share, by the way. My understanding is that Oracle Larry will not be entering. It goes on to say the cost of the cup, which has proved too high for even him, which leaves someone to wonder, I guess, who will show up. Did you get that sense in those sort of debrief conversations from Larry post-Bermuda that maybe his time in the cup was drawing to an end? He had been there, done that, won it. Now it's moved on. He sort of spent his hundreds of millions, time for other projects.
No, I didn't. But also, to be quite honest, you know, Larry and I, straight after the Cup, we were really kind of reminiscing on the team and during that moment. And I don't think any of us really knew what the future would hold because we were, you know, sort of so... You know, well, I guess in some ways I was anyway. I was just sort of a bit stunned and in a bit of shock, really, that that we'd lost, you know, because you just put so much into it.
Yeah, when Larry, even Larry Ellison loses interest in the America's Cup, I think it's time to call it a day, don't you? Let's go back to the theatre instead. Can't wait to see the play that goes wrong. Here's a couple of guys who are in it, talking to Andrew Dickens yesterday.
It started small and it's ended big. So let's go right the way back to the beginning, the start of the decade. You guys are drama students and you're flatting together.
That's right, yeah. We graduated from a drama school in West London called Lambda, and myself, John, and Henry Shields, the other writer, lived together in a small flat in Gunnersbury. It wasn't the best flat. We were working not the best of jobs. John was in a call centre. Henry Shields was working in a pub. I was working in a burger restaurant. And so we decided, you know, we'd try and take things in our own hands and create a project. And so when we got in from our sort of respective jobs quite late in the evening, we would start writing. And we had this idea to do this murder mystery that goes wrong. We started writing it, and the first version was just an hour long. And we managed to find a theatre, which was just a small theatre, 60 seats, and it was above a pub in Islington in North London. And we put the show on over Christmas show. We were in a late slot. And then we continued to grow the project from there. We were really fortunate. We were offered a space at Trafalgar Studios, which is a sort of West End studio space with 100 seats. And then we took the show on tour. We wrote a second act so that it was a full-length show. And that's now the show that sort of exists. And that's the show that's coming to New Zealand. And it's been to earlier this year. And is in the West End now and on Broadway.
Yes, if you've ever been on stage watching a play like that, it's a bit like watching a horror movie because you can relate to it a little bit too much. I'm sure it never goes wrong for Kevin Bridges. He's a comedian and he joined Jack Tame on Saturday.
How would you describe Glasgow to people who have never been there?
It's edgy. I'd say it's friendly, but I think you could encounter trouble with relative ease, but the people on the whole are very generous and warm, but then there's an element probably to avoid, but no, it's where I've always lived, so I enjoy it, but I don't, maybe it's not for everybody.
Yeah, you see, I have always wanted to visit Glasgow. I kind of imagine it's a city full of characters, but also a place where you could quite easily get glassed in a bar fight.
Aye, that's perfectly summed up. That's probably, you've explained it better than me.
Yeah.
Aye, you could find trouble. Aye, that's just stereotypes. Everywhere's a bit like that, but I think Glasgow just seems to be, everyone's a bit more in your face. So there's that element. It could be intimidating to some people, but no, I think people are kind and, but anywhere else really, it's good. It's good bits and it's bad bits.
I know it's a kind of a superficial thing to say, but when you've got an accent like that, even the bad bits sound like good bits, don't they? That was me trying to do his ex. What do you mean it didn't sound? Okay, well, we'll stop the podcast then. I am Glenn ZB. That has been News Talk ZB. I won't do any accents tomorrow for you, probably. I'll see you then.